Hey guys. Well, I'm enjoying doing these live feeds and but I'll have to admit that I'm really bad at letting you know I'm about to do them. So hopefully you all will slowly be getting onto my live feed. And this is also the podcast. So this video will live on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter, and then I will put the audio into my podcast. And this is another, I guess this is my part three of communities and schools. And hey, Angela Smith, no way. That's so funny. Anyway, I won't say who Angela Smith is and give out personal information, but she is my good friend. So hey, Angela. So this is good. I want you guys to start jumping in. So I've been doing this series on communities and schools, presenting the facts. And the facts are that I have downloaded a lot of their diversity, equity, and inclusion tools and resources that they have on their website. And you are free to go download them yourself and read them yourself. These are all made public by communities and schools. I'll even talk about an assessment that they have on their website, and it's under their DEI resources. So just go to diversity, equity, inclusion, and then you'll see that they had a diversity, equity, inclusion summit in November of 2022. You can click on their resources and you can see all the same things that I'm presenting on my podcast. And why is this important? Well, because we're many of us, some of us are just learning about DEI, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And some people have been studying this for quite some time and they know a lot. So I'm going to present this as if you don't know a whole lot about it. And I'm still learning, to be quite honest. One of the things that's important to know about diversity, equity, and inclusion is that that's not really the original name. Really, the DEI, which is how I'll reference it for the rest of this podcast, is basically, let me make sure I've got my microphone close to me. I don't know if you guys could hear me or not. Basically, this DEI is based on a neo-Marxist ideology. But because people immediately, like if I said just now, you heard the word Marxist, some of you might be thinking, oh, I don't want to hear about that. Well, that's exactly why they changed the name. They don't want people to recoil when they hear something that they know isn't good. So then it turned into critical theory, and then it turned into critical social justice and intersectionality. And now we're calling it diversity, equity, and inclusion. I don't say we, but now it's called that. And I believe a good friend of mine just the other day, and I haven't researched this yet, so she's probably going to get mad at me for not saying it properly. But apparently, the World Economic Forum is now calling it belonging and something else. So belonging sounds a lot nicer, right? Everybody wants to belong, and we want other people to belong. So that sounds really soft and caring, and would probably be accepted by many people unless they knew the ideology behind it. So today, I will be talking a little bit about that, but also showing you an example of how communities and schools is using DEI in our public school system and why it's important to know, not only because of what they're teaching or how they're approaching their case management and their intensive counseling with our students or with our children, but how the government is really involved in ensuring that this is happening and not giving parents the authority or the power to do anything about it. And that's what's interesting. So as I started researching communities and schools, I started realizing that they did something that I have to say is pretty genius. It's evil genius, but it's pretty genius. So right now, for example, in Texas, and every state has education laws, but in the state of Texas, we have education laws that, just really the laws for all kinds of things, what we're teaching and such. But it also offers parents protections. So in other words, you can't teach our children certain things unless you get our consent. Or if you find an issue with some of the teaching or something that a teacher has done or anything like that, you have a grievance process. And it's spelled out in our law and in policy what we can do as parents about these things. There may be some laws that say that Certain programs need to go through an approval process through the State Board of Education, which are elected officials in our state. And so, in other words, in order to bring a new program into the school, you have to jump through all these hoops, maybe even wait till election time, until we go into session to approve a program, things like that. Well, how about if there's a way that we can just not go through that process? And how about if an organization finds a way to not have to get parent approval or tell parents what they're doing? What if there's an organization that can implement programs without even asking the board of directors about it? The freedom to be able to teach what you want, to counsel as you please, to have whatever process that you want. How about that with no accountability, no approval process, you just implement it. And we've been seeing that across the nation, right? And parents are going to board meetings and we're fighting hard. We're doing what we can to protect our kids and our really our right as the sole authority of our children. Well, Communities and Schools has found a way to do that, to circumvent all of those issues. And they're doing it at the federal level and at the state level. So in other words, Communities and Schools, although in Texas, they are written into our law to provide services, and the services sound really good. It's to reduce the dropout rates, provide food to children who may be hungry by linking them with community organizations, like let's say a food bank or other things like that. And so they kind of work as a middleman where they're like, well, a child is in need of this or that. And so instead of burdening the school counselor with it, Communities and Schools will make all those connections for that child. They'll come alongside the child and help them so that they're removing barriers from their lives that may affect their ability to learn. And then once those barriers are removed and the child has the basic needs that the child needs, the belief is that then, you know, they'll be able to focus on academics and graduate. And that all sounds wonderful. Just saying it like that sounds wonderful, doesn't it? Well, what's happening is that Communities in Schools is a third party vendor. That means that even though, like in the state of Texas, they're written into our law and they're written into the Texas Education Agency's education strategic plan to be part of the schools, they're not actually part of the schools. They're not employed by the state. They're not W-2 employees of any district or even of the TEA. They're completely independent. They're contracted. I'm not sure if that's the right word to use or not, but that's the best word I can think of right now. They're contracted. They're getting education funding from you know, the pot of education money. They're getting paid that way. They're getting money from the federal government as well, the ESSA funds through Biden, Every Student Succeeds Act. And all of that brings in some of their key issues that they'd like to address, like diversity, equity, and inclusion. And when I say that this is genius work, is that because they're a third-party vendor, they can bring in these programs and they can counsel and all of the model of how they do things. They don't need the district to approve it. They've already contracted with the district. And so now that third-party vendor, Communities and Schools, can implement their program however they want, including diversity, equity, and inclusion. So, what it made me realize as I started discovering this is that this approach is, like, for example, all over the state, we are working hard to get rid of social emotional learning, get rid of assessments. We want our teachers to get back to academics. We want all of these extras, mindfulness, all these extra things to be removed from our school. These are, one, it's not academics. Two, it doesn't align with family values. It's not what we want the schools doing. Then I realized as I studied Communities and Schools that perhaps we'll actually get our way in the sense of that we might actually be able to accomplish school teachers getting back to academics, maybe. But Communities and Schools is going to swoop in and provide all the above. They'll provide the social emotional learning. They'll provide the intensive case management and group counseling. They'll bring in speakers to teach mindfulness and sex education and whatever else. They'll come in And with their worldview being diversity, equity, inclusion, will then view our children through that lens, educate them, counsel them, and guide them with the lens of diversity, equity, inclusion. And so I'll show you what that's going to look like. Now, I got this aha moment that CIS is basically going to bring in all the things that parents don't want. And it's done without us knowing about it. It's done without any kind of approval other than they contract with the district. And that's it. It's pretty simple. And then I read an article by Christopher Rufo, who's known as, you know, really an expert in critical race theory in our country. And he, working as a senior fellow with the Manhattan Institute, have put together some model legislation to get rid of DEI from our states. He's currently doing that in Florida. I've shared his model legislation with legislators here in Texas. Hopefully, they will be able to do something with that. But reading his article, and it's called Biden Nationalizes the DEI Bureaucracy, he's really talking about Biden's executive order to nationalize diversity, equity, and inclusion in our education system from elementary schools and above. And by reading this article, I realized that I wasn't imagining what I was watching communities and schools doing, that they come in as a third-party vendor. We can't FOIA them. We can't run PIRs on them. We can't figure out what they're doing because they're independent and they're a private organization. So we can't submit a grievance against them. We don't have power over them because they're a third-party vendor in our school. Well, apparently one of the three key strategies that is in Biden's executive order on DEI, one of them is actually funding third-party political activism through grants to community-based organizations. And he basically spells out in this article the things that I discovered about communities and schools. That basically we would not be able to FOIA them. We won't be able to find out what they're doing because they don't have to follow education law. And because they're not a government agency, we don't have the right to ask for their documents or their assessments or their communications in any way. They run independently and they are doing the bidding of Biden and the bidding of the DEI cult and ideology. So there we go. It wasn't just me. It is something that, you know, people who are fighting this and studying this way beyond what I have are basically saying that that's exactly what's happening. So I highly recommend that you go to Christopher Rufo's Substack and look up his most recent article, Biden Nationalizes the DEI Bureaucracy. Yeah, I don't think you can see it there, but and read that, and also read Biden's executive order. And then you can go to the Manhattan Institute and download the model legislation against DEI. Very important, because the model legislation also addresses third-party vendors. So what is this with communities and schools and DEI, and how do I know that they're actually practicing DEI? Well, one of the reasons I know, and I think I have the article here, I may not have printed it, is that in one of their recent articles regarding their DEI summit in November 2022, they basically said that DEI is their North Star. It's what they're focused on. It is what will basically guide them in all of their work. And you can go to Communities and Schools and you can read that article for yourself. I believed it was published on their blog in like January 13th or something like that. So they are calling diversity, equity, inclusion their North Star. In other words, when we talk about worldview, Communities and Schools has committed and has announced that they are committed to working from the lens of diversity, equity, inclusion, which is social justice, critical social justice, and intersectionality. And so let's see what that looks like. One of the other things that they mention, Ray Saldana is their executive director in San Antonio. And there's on their YouTube channel, they have their not from their DEI summit, but it's a another conference that they had in October for their affiliates. And they actually mentioned that they believe that they hold a really strong position of authority. Now, this I'm actually reading the transcript. They hold we hold a really strong position of authority because we're inside schools, because we're working with the students, because we are consistent. They are really explaining that the reason that they can be successful with their social justice warrior ideology, they are saying, is because we hold a really strong position of authority, because we're inside schools, because we're working with students, because we are consistent. They go on to say is, as I think about our role as an organization that is pushing towards our values, towards justice, that's important for us to recognize the lane that we have inside education. Our role inside schools, that's where the real work is happening. Sometimes we talk about policies that we can change. And when we change those policies, they may have an impact 2 or 3 years down the road. Some people like you, and he's referring to the site coordinators or the staff of communities and schools, which work on campus full time. He says, some people like you all in the room are doing it every single day, and you have an authority. Site coordinators have power. Our executive directors have power because they're working in these communities, not as outsiders, but as insiders. That's right. So they understand their power over our children and to push their critical social justice ideology on our children. He goes on to say, I've certainly seen the shift in us growing that muscle and becoming a lot more comfortable in speaking out around, you know, our social equity work and the making sure that there is not separation of church and state between, you know, social justice and education. So he's basically saying, as we see separation of church and state, which I'm not going to go into what all that means, but what he means by it is that basically Christianity is not to be taught in schools. And that's what he's talking about. But he's saying equity work, that there isn't going to be a separation with equity work in schools. He is saying between you, no separation of church and state between, you know, social justice and education. They are running the same. So they're committed to teaching social justice warrior or critical social justice or critical race theory or diversity, equity, inclusion, which includes privilege and intersectionality in our schools through their program, Communities and Schools. And so let's go into what that also looks like. So what we need to understand is that CRT, or DEI, has a cosmology of, in that it's it's like an anti-racist cult. But the way they approach everything is through racism. And so they're actually implementing racist activity in order to supposedly get rid of racism. And so Vodi Bakum calls them an anti-racist cult. And what they do is, instead of talking about, he sees it as a religion almost, but instead of like Christianity, where we are seeking forgiveness or redemption and salvation, diversity, equity, inclusion is actually saying that the solution is penance. You have to make penance. So if you are a privileged race, like the white race, there is no forgiveness or salvation for you through DEI. The solution is that you must feel guilty and you must make penance and become one of their accomplices. And I'll go into what an accomplice is later. So there's no forgiveness in DEI. It is penance. If you are privileged, then you must make penance for that. All of this is based on grievance studies. And really, those grievance studies are revealed via experience and personal stories. And it takes a lot of faith, basically. So it's not rooted in any kind of reality. It's actually rooted in a belief system that one must make penance. It's not a faith like Christian faith at all, but it can be very much confused because of the language that they use that sounds so soft and loving, but yet in reality, their solution is to make you feel guilty and for you to pay penance for the sin of your privilege. So let's look at one of communities and schools trainings. So this is from their DEI summit in 2022, The Power of In, Included, Involved, and Inspired. Once again, I want to remind you about their article on their website that says that this DEI is their North Star. It is the lens through which they do all their work. So let's see what that looks like. This activity is called the Beads of Privilege, and it's to explore intersectionality, privilege through self-discovery. Now this, at the end of the presentation, I'll show you what sources they used to create this presentation. Now this is the young lady, Ashley Murray, who presented this training. She created this training and she presented it as a leader at the DEI Summit in November. I want you to see where she's from. She is the College Engagement and Alumni Coordinator of Communities and Schools of South Central Texas. Now, I'm going to pause here, guys. I live in Fredericksburg, Texas. Communities and schools, this is why I started investigating them, because all of a sudden they were going to come into our school. We were able to stop them, but I know they're going to try to come back again. But what's really interesting is that myself and many community members and parents basically said, board, please do not bring CIS because we've discovered that they practice diversity, equity, inclusion. And it's a racist ideology and it does not reflect the values of the families of Fredericksburg in Texas. CIS said that we were spreading misinformation. We gave the board some of the proof from their very own website that they were a diversity, equity, inclusion, privilege kind of pushing organization, that they believed all white people were privileged and oppressive. And the response from communities and schools, once again, was that it was misinformation and that communities of school in schools of South Central Texas does not practice DEI and that they would not bring DEI to Fredericksburg. But what's very curious is that meeting and those comments occurred in October. Here we are at the DEI summit in November, and their very own staff member is one of the leaders at the DEI summit for communities and schools, and she's teaching about privilege. So which is true and where is the misinformation or who's giving the misinformation? In this case, it's communities and schools trying to convince our board in Fredericksburg that they don't believe or work from a lens or a worldview of diversity, equity, inclusion, but they're proving that that is not true. They're proving that that is their North Star and that is what they work from. So what does this look like? Learning objectives. I'm not going to go through the entire training, but I am going to show you their process. Learners will understand privilege and intersectionality. Learners will consider the barriers youth face through the lens of privilege and intersectionality. Learners will create a visual representation of their self-privilege. Learners will apply the concepts of privilege and intersectionality in the representation of advocacy for disadvantaged youth. And learners will evaluate the approaches to inclusion currently used in their organizations. So I want you to understand that when I was in comprehensive sex education, I went through lots of these kind of trainings. And what this does is it sets you up. As you can see, this isn't about a debate. This is you are going to learn that there is privilege and that there is intersectionality. You will learn that those things are not only true, but how they become barriers for the youth that you work with from a lens of privilege and intersectionality. So this isn't about this. They're basically saying, we're teaching you a worldview. That worldview is true. And that's the worldview that you're going to use during this training and in your work in the community. And so there isn't another way. There's not another worldview for them. This is the worldview. So if you're someone in this training that doesn't espouse to that worldview, you're either going to reject it and quit, or you're going to stay and allow yourself to learn and understand privilege and intersectionality, how it creates barriers for youth, how you probably have your own privilege and how you can address that, and then how you're going to challenge your environment to also accept that new DEI worldview. Now, this is a training for adults. Now, can you imagine? And we know that there are some adults who have actually gone through this training and been completely converted to DEI. There is a story, actually, of a friend of mine who said that at a public school, a teacher who was a friend of hers, really, said that she went through one of these trainings, and it was an African-American woman who was teaching the DEI training to these teachers. And she said that by the end of the training, this teacher, who was a white woman, was in tears accepting her oppressive nature and her privilege. And she cried in the arms of the person who led the training. Now, she went home after that, and a few hours later came to her senses and realized, wait a minute, what did I just accept? What did I just believe? And she couldn't believe how she had been manipulated in that training through her compassion and through her own emotions and her own experiences that led her to believe that she truly was a white supremacist who didn't understand her privilege and that she needed to make penance. She understood that she was manipulated. She realized it wasn't true, and she didn't accept any of that again. And she was able to recognize that that was a manipulation. So now, if our adult teachers are falling for this, are being manipulated into believing this, how much more do you think it's going to affect our children? So this is, as parents, we need to understand these methods so that we can protect our kids and prepare them. Because it doesn't mean that they're not, just because we protect them or homeschool them. The truth is we live in the world, and we need to know how to chew and spit. If you haven't read Mama Bear Apologetics, you need to read it. Our children need to learn not only the truth that we teach them, but then how do they take in information in the world, assess that information on the truth that they know, and then get rid of the stuff that they know isn't right. So here's the definition of privilege according to communities and schools. They're getting this from the Encyclopedia of Social Work, the National Association of Social Workers Press, and Oxford University Press. You can look this up online. This is just a snippet of a definition that they got from this particular study. And it's sitting in a place of unearned benefit, advantages across multiple dimensions, whether it's race, class, gender, sexual orientation, sexual identity, age, ability, status, and more. So unearned benefit. That is privilege. When you have something good in your life that you did not earn, to me, that just reeks of a bitter heart. to convince someone that the goodness in your life was unearned, you don't deserve it, and you need to make penance. That is just coming from a bitter, bitter place. That is not a Christian perspective whatsoever. But that is the definition of privilege. So as they are showing this definition, the expectation is that the people in this training accept that definition as true and then apply it in the training. Here's the definition of intersectionality, the acknowledgement that everyone has their own unique experiences of discrimination. Basically, is that it's how our discrimination is layered upon layer. So I'm a Hispanic woman. Let's say I identify as a lesbian or non-binary. So then not only am I have a level of discrimination because I'm Hispanic, but I'm also a woman, I'm also a lesbian, and I'm also non-binary. And when I have all those levels of intersectionality, that makes my voice more powerful than someone else, unless they have more levels of intersectionality than I do. That's really what that means. And it's not, again, it's not a Christian worldview. It's not a worldview that creates equality among people of equal value is what I mean by equality, that we all have equal value. This is not about equal value at all. This is about creating division. So how do they play the beads of privilege? Once they know the definitions, basically they're going to take beads. If the prompt is true to you, take a bead. If the prompt is false, you don't. And then they're going to discuss at the end, not during. So there's no debate during this training. It's all done at the end. And then while you're doing this, you must consider privilege or lack thereof and how that affects you, how the privilege affects youth and in your organization, how the different privileges interact, and then notice and welcome your feelings. And so what they're really saying here is they want you to internalize it. So this is something very common done in behavior change theory, is that now I have given you the lens in which you are to view everything from. This lens, you're going to view yourself from this lens. You're going to use this lens to view the disadvantaged youth. So, okay. So you don't want to go contrary to that, because then you're not going to be kind to the youth. That's not true, but that's what they're doing. They want you to accept this definition of privilege and then how they interact. And what they're going to do by having you respond to the various questions or examples that they're going to show you is you begin to internalize it. So now you're looking through this particular lens. Now you're looking into your own life, your own experiences. Because you're not allowed to use a different worldview during this training, only the one that they're telling you to use, you start to make connections between what they're saying, which is privilege, unearned privilege, and your experiences, and you start to internalize it. So in other words, they don't have to tell you your privilege. They're leading you through an exercise so that you start to say, oh my gosh, I have unearned privilege. And that's how they start to internalize it inside of people. And once it's internalized, it's much more powerful, because now that person becomes an accomplice and they're able to then share that in the world and affect their sphere of influence. And that's how this goes. Yeah. So they go through class privilege, ability privilege. I can expect to easily find housing that accommodates my physical needs. I can sit anywhere in the room and be able to see. So apparently, if you have great eyesight or if you're tall, you have more privilege than a short person. Guys, go and view. I'm not going to read all of these because it'll take forever. Go and view this. This is ridiculous. I don't have to think about my daily pain levels when planning events and activities. Now, that's one of those questions that sets you up. It's like, well, don't you care about someone's pain? Oh, I have a lot of friends and family who have pain levels from different chronic illnesses that they have. Here's the difference. Well, for example, my father has had cancer most of his adult life, most of my life. We don't see that as him lacking privilege, or that me not having cancer, I have privilege. If anything, when we face difficulties, we have seen that our faith has increased. We have become stronger as individuals and as family members. But in this case, it's about penance. I'm in pain and you're not. You have unearned privilege. It's a bitterness. Do you see that? And they're doing it with race. They do it with sexuality. It goes on and on and on. And here's the next one. Ooh. Okay, now this is interesting. So I got this one from the resource that this trainer used to create her PowerPoint. Now, she didn't include this one specifically, Christian privilege, but it's in the resource that she used. But in the previous slide about sexuality privilege, she kind of tweaked one of the questions so that it would include Christian privilege, or maybe even other religions as well, like the Muslim faith possibly. I can easily find a religious community that will not exclude me because of my sexuality. Again, this is about complete acceptance, complete affirmation, and allyship with whatever that sexuality is, whether it's homosexuality, bisexuality, trans, minor attracted person, pedophile is the word. Again, apparently you are lacking in privilege. Somehow you are oppressed if the religion does not align with your values. Do you see that? Do you see the injustice in them when they say that we have to change and compromise our values to fit this person, and how selfish it is? I don't expect other people to change for me. I can share my faith with people, but they have to choose it for themselves. I will not force them to choose it. I can't. It's impossible. And that's not the way Christianity works. So it's just interesting how they do that. So here's the Christian privilege one. And that is, and I believe that the only reason she left this out is because she knew it would create a little too much controversy probably in the training. But I have seen this before by some of the diversity officers in various schools around Texas. I know Leander ISD, I went to the Rouse High School DEI training or conference that they had for parents when they first started their DEI. And they made lots of hints to Christianity being oppressive to other people of various orientations or gender identities. So this is definitely something that we're seeing often. And then they talk about other random privilege. And then they want to go into talking about it. How did you feel? And all of this is facilitated. It's very well facilitated. I hate to say it. You all know I used to be a big liberal. This is a big piece of the trainings that I used to do. And all of it is using social emotional learning and manipulating people with feelings and allowing them to feel what they're feeling, but you still acknowledge that there are some people who are oppressed and that you might have some privilege that others don't, and that you need to be sensitive to that. And how can you be an advocate for that person who is oppressed by your privilege, your unearned privilege? I mean, I'm telling you, I hate that I can speak it so well. I used to be a big liberal, right? You know that about me. If you don't, go to my website, monicaklein.com, and you'll learn a little bit about me. I'm completely reformed and completely changed by the saving grace of Jesus Christ, of course. But this is why I want to share this with you guys, because I have that inside knowledge of what these trainings look like and what they're really doing. Let's skip through some of these. There are the sources. So when you go to their website and you download this particular PowerPoint, you can click on these hyperlinks and actually see the definition of intersectionality, the privilege definition, the beads of privilege exercise that they downloaded from a feminist organization. You can see all of the details of that. And again, this is Ashley Murray. She is with Communities in School South Central Texas, which is the very affiliate that told us that they do not teach or work from the lens of DEI. And I don't know why they would say that we were misinformed or that we were spreading lies about them. It actually looks like they lied, because the proof is here. It's right here. Okay. They're actually leading it. Interesting, huh? Now, here's another thing I wanted to show you guys. I can't show you the whole assessment because it'll take too long. But this assessment is available on their website as well. And it's really just for staff, but they don't have any passcodes or anything to keep you from looking at the assessment. But this is their CIS Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Self-Assessment Survey. And this is for board members, site coordinators. Now, site coordinators are the full-time people that are on campus, full-time on campus. They're not employed by the district. They're employed by Communities in Schools. And they are the ones that are implementing the services and that are working from a DEI world view. Now, I'm going to read to you what this assessment is like. And this assessment is basically an assessment to ensure that not only have their employees thoroughly been trained in DEI, but that they are implementing it and that they are challenging other people on campus and students on DEI practices. So they are attempting to change the worldview of our district staff, our children, and the families in those communities. Let's see what that sounds like. Have you attended or scheduled for annual DEI training as part of a strategic staff development plan to advance our organization along the 5-point DEI? So you have to assess yourself. Are you getting the training that we told you you need to get within our organization? Have you facilitated ongoing dialogue and reflection on practice with stakeholders about diversity, equity, inclusion? If you read their book, stakeholders are going to be some of the leaders within the community that they are in, the district that they're in. But it could also be their funders. Have they vetted, trained, and promoted diverse volunteers in principles aligned with diversity, equity, and inclusion, and supervised, provided feedback as appropriate? Have they received training on how to have courageous conversations about race and equity issues with staff, students, families, and administrators? So have you completed it? Have you partially completed it? Have you not completed it? There you go. That's the expectation right there, to have courageous conversations about race and equity issues with staff, students, families, and administrators. Now, someone could say, yeah, Monica, but maybe they're just talking about, you know, just regular, you know, just making sure that people are kind to one another. Well, we just went through a whole training, and I want you to see that they're working from a racist ideology that says that if you don't have enough melanin in your skin, if you are a Christian, if you are traditional in any way, if you are able-bodied, then you're oppressive. So go read it for yourself, what they really believe. Have you partnered with school and district personnel to create school system transformation related to DEI? How much more proof do you need? There it is. And so if you're from Texas, I want you to go call your legislators and ask them, or and even the Commissioner of Education, Mike Morath, why have we partnered so aggressively and thoroughly with an organization, communities and schools, who are indoctrinating and re-educating our children in our very own backyard with our taxpayer money? And not just why, but stop it now. Get rid of communities and schools from our schools and out of our education agency. They do not belong there. This is a political ideology in identity politics, and they do not belong in our education agency. Have you recognized and intervened and repaired any microaggressions as they were revealed to me in a timely manner? Have I confidently addressed any problematic behavior in the moment with staff, district, and personnel? Remember, this assessment is specifically about DEI, not just any behavior. But if they're basically saying, are you challenging behavior that does not align with the DEI critical race theory or critical theory? Because it's not just race, it's critical sex theory, gender theory, it's all of it. And I won't read and read and read, but all of it is about basically, are you actively sharing the message and really putting pressure on the district, the staff, the families, and the children to accept DEI? Now, how about a real life story? And I'll probably bring on some families who might have some real life stories about CIS, but we've seen this in action in Texas. We've seen a young girl being counseled by communities and schools asking her why her parents pulled her out of a classroom with a transgender teacher, a man who was dressing as a woman. CIS pulled her and interrogated her and tried to re-educate this young student because her parents pulled her out of a classroom with a transgender biological male dressing as a woman. And he was offended. He was offended that she was pulled out of his class. And CIS came in to educate that little girl and make sure that she was supportive of her transgender teacher. That is what CIS is doing right there. Now, I think the last thing I'm going to mention is when I talked about behavior change theories. And I know that when I worked in comprehensive sex education, HIV, we use the behavior change theory to help people move from not using condoms to using condoms. So looking at this training, it just reeked of behavior change theory. And I wanted to know which one it was. And I found one that seems to align with what they're doing. And it's called the theory of planned behavior. And a lot of it is basically their people's behavioral attitudes, their subjective norms, and their personal behavior control. And basically what it's saying is that you're presented with information, and in this case with DEI, you begin to feel uncomfortable when you are real, when you're being convinced that somehow you're a racist with unearned privilege, and that there are people suffering because you have this privilege. And it starts to feel uncomfortable. And as the environment starts to change around you, now imagine this is your child in a school, as the environment is saying that this is not the kind of person that you should be, that you should not have this, you know, that if you are privileged, then you need to be able to acknowledge that and become an ally and an accomplice in spreading this message, and believing that all people with more melanin than you are somehow incapable of succeeding, that they're always oppressed. I mean, all of this is racist. But if you're constantly being pressured by your environment to change and to take on this worldview, then that child will begin to change because they've made the environment uncomfortable enough. And per that assessment, they're challenging staff, teachers, children, and families. If you feel uncomfortable enough, you will want to change to feel comfortable. And then your environment starts to praise you for changing your worldview. And that is what our children are experiencing. And I'm just kind of like, that was a little bit of a summary of theory of planned behavior. But that's really what they're doing, is that they're creating this environment that makes you uncomfortable if you do not affirm and accept that worldview of DEI. And the only way you're going to feel better and accepted by the culture around you is if you submit to their worldview. But we're not raising children who submit to the world. We're raising children who submit to the authority of their parents and to the values that parents have taught them. And we're raising children who will become courageous adults. They're not courageous adults yet, but we're raising them to be courageous, loving adults who know truth. And that is the key here. I know Vodi Bakum said that quite a bit in his book, that the way we are going to overcome this is with truth. And we need to teach our kids truth. And that'll be on another podcast. So what do we teach our kids? And what truth do we need to know as pastors, as adults in the community, as Christians, to be able to overcome this? But for now, dive into those various resources that Community Schools has on their website, so that you can learn about their worldview, what they're really doing, how they're harming our children, and make a case to get them out of your school. And do not believe them when they say that they're not doing this, because it is what they believe. It is the expectation. Remember, they say that DEI is their North Star. It's what they're focusing on. And everything that they do is from the lens of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Now, guys, I just want you to continue on your pursuit for truth. I want you to be courageous. And I think the greatest thing that I learned this week, because you all know, if you're familiar with me, that I've been doing this work for many years, and I started in exposing comprehensive sex education. And we know that when we start exposing the lies in the world, we're going to be attacked spiritually, sometimes even attacked by the people in our own community. Perhaps our family members aren't talking to us anymore. There's all kinds of ways, but we're challenging the lies and we're pursuing truth. But we can easily get overwhelmed by that. And one of the things that I learned this week that really helped me was focusing in on Martha and Mary. Now, usually in the Bible, sermons will focus on Martha and how busy she is and how distracted she is and try not to be like Martha. But this time, this sermon really dove in into talking about Mary and what it's like to sit at the feet of Jesus. And it was incredibly empowering because God had already told me, Monica, keep things simple. And it's hard to keep things simple because there's so much information out there and you feel overwhelmed. But it is important to keep things simple and to focus in by sitting at the feet of Jesus and allowing him to guide you in all you do. And that's what I did for this podcast today. It may not be perfect. I don't have content creators. I don't have someone editing my videos, which is why I'm doing live videos because I don't want to spend the time editing. It's like a one-shot thing because it's complicated. I don't know how to edit videos. I don't know how to do all these things. I'm not an expert necessarily in DEI, but I know what I read and I know what's right and I know what's wrong. And so do you. So don't let anyone tell you that because you don't have an education or because you don't have this degree or that degree that you don't get it. That is not true. I know there was a teacher out there, a video that went viral that said, well, we have master's degrees. We know what we're doing. Parents don't have anything. What kind of degree do they have? Well, we have the degree of the fact that we are the stewards over our children. We know right from wrong, and we are the sole authority over our children. And what we say is the law for our children. And so I don't want you to be distracted or to be made to feel that because maybe you don't have an education or whatever your circumstances are, that you can't speak up on this. You know right from wrong, and you speak out with courage. Our kids need to see that we're leading. Go ahead and keep leading your children. I'm praying for you guys. I really am. If you have any questions, feel free to visit me on my website, monicacline.com. You can email me from there and contact me with any questions that you have. And God bless you guys for the rest of this week and ongoing. And I'll see you next week.